from one active conflict zone to another. In Europe, the picture this week is one of accelerating military institutionalization, allies building structures, not just making pledges. 9 European nations have formed a formal missile defense coalition with Ukraine. That's a qualitative step beyond weapons transfers or financial support. A coalition implies shared command structures, interoperability requirements, and a long-term commitment to Ukrainian air defense that survives changes in individual national governments.
The Patriot missile story ties directly into that. Reports today indicate that Ukraine's future Patriot missile production is likely to be based in Germany. That's significant for 2 reasons. First, it means European defense industrial capacity is being explicitly expanded to support a country that is not an EU or NATO member, a structural change in how Europe thinks about its security perimeter. Second, Germany choosing to host Patriot production is a statement about Berlin's willingness to be a frontline military industrial partner for Ukraine, which would have been politically impossible as recently as 2021.
Emmanuel Macron's Bastille Day Eve address deserves serious attention, Sarah. This was not a routine speech. Macron said Europe is ready to defend freedom at the cost of blood. That phrase, delivered in the context of a gathering of Coalition of the Willing leaders in Paris, is extraordinary. Coalition of the Willing in this context refers to the European Security Coalition that has been building outside NATO's formal structure, partly in response to uncertainty about American commitment under the current administration. Macron is essentially telling both Moscow and Washington, Europe has its own security doctrine now, and it will back that doctrine with force if necessary.
The Russian spy unit story from the New York Times adds another dimension here. Russia is apparently running an active intelligence operation out of Tokyo, using Japan as a base to source dual-use technology for its war effort, exploiting Japan's position as a major tech exporter and the relative openness of its research institutions. That's a sophisticated operation, and it suggests Russia has adapted its sanctions evasion and technology acquisition strategy to route through Asia rather than Europe, where scrutiny is higher. For Japan, this is diplomatically awkward. Tokyo has been one of the more consistent G7 supporters of Ukraine sanctions, and now it has to acknowledge a Russian intelligence presence operating on its soil.
Zelensky's wartime cabinet reshuffle is also noteworthy. Removing a prime minister during active conflict is a high-risk move. It signals dissatisfaction with the economic management or war coordination at the top, but it also creates a period of institutional uncertainty at exactly the moment when institutional continuity matters most. Yulia Sviridenko had been in office for a year. The fact that Zelensky moved her out now, rather than waiting for a more stable moment, suggests the internal pressure from some specific failure, whether in reconstruction funding, military procurement, or coalition management, was acute enough that he felt he couldn't wait.
The Trump administration's campaign to isolate the International Criminal Court runs parallel to all of this. The State Department pursuing travel bans, visa revocations, and sanctions against ICC personnel is a direct response to the court's warrants related to the Russia-Ukraine conflict, specifically the warrant for Vladimir Putin issued in 2023 and subsequent proceedings. By pressuring the ICC, the administration is effectively shielding not just American personnel from potential future jurisdiction, but also creating diplomatic cover for other actors who might otherwise face ICC scrutiny. European nations who are ICC members and financial backers of the court are watching this very carefully.
One more thread here. Sarah, Hungary's decision to join the EU prosecutor's office, unlocking 16.4 billion euros in previously frozen funds. This is Viktor Orban's successor government making a significant concession to Brussels, joining the EPO, which is an anti-corruption body that Orban had spent years resisting, precisely because it would create accountability mechanisms for Hungarian government spending. The fact that this happened under the new Hungarian government suggests either a genuine break from the Orban era's confrontational Brussels strategy, or a pragmatic calculation that 16.4 billion euros is worth the accountability trade-off. Either way, it modestly improves EU cohesion at a moment when cohesion matters.